We tried to do this opening once before. It didn't work out very well. So
yes,
trying again.
We reopen. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Jan.
I'm Alex.
Hi, Alex.
Hello.
How was your first week of podcasting?
I liked the process of doing it. I listened to it on the way to work. And other than the fact that there was a lot of puh, we had to get one of those little screens that you put in the microphone that keeps the popping sounds from happening. Other than that, I thought it was pretty good. I thought we did an okay job.
Yeah, we received a lot of encouragements, which is good for me because I'm insecure, you know me. And a lot of comments, so thank you all, and for our new listeners, welcome to our podcast.
But don't be shy, please. You gotta write to us, and you gotta tell us what you think, and you gotta help.
We have
give
an email now.
Direction
that somebody arranged for us.
Who? Me.
Yeah. His name is Alex. Hello at daddysqr.com.
Hello at daddysqr.com. Write us.
And in case you didn't know where you come to, this is Daddy Square Podcast. I'm not going to knock over the microphone. We're coming here every week and we're talking to people about specific issues that relates to parenting in general and may arise for gay couples having children. We bring on gay dads to tell their stories, and we hope that our guests serve as mentors to our listeners in some way.
See, I think you should try to do that again now without looking at the piece of paper and just say it. Come on, say it. Just say what you just said. Say it. So what we're trying
I already
to
said
do,
that.
What we're trying to do is we're trying to have kind of a forum and an opportunity to bring on people who are experts in their particular field but are also gay dads,
yes,
who can share with us what they know, mm-hmm, and share with us what their experiences are and give us an opportunity to poke at them with lots of questions.
One issue that came up this week, and I wanted to kind of mention it briefly because it's kind of became an international news. Are you sweating?
It's hot in here. Go ahead.
Coming to you live from a hotel in West Hollywood.
We are in a hotel two blocks away from our house because
we're not going to tell that story.
Oh, we're not telling that story.
No.
Okay. Oh, right.
One issue that came up this week is the interview with the former Sesame Street writer, Mark Saltzman.
I don't know.
I'll say it in a perfect Hebrew pronunciation. So Mark Saltzman, he talked to Queerty about his role in Sesame Street, and he outed Bert and Ernie, and you know, basically, I don't think it was news to anyone.
Everybody's been joking about how they're a gay couple since I was a kid. I guess it's official.
Really, it's that old?
Absolutely. All right, take it easy. I guess it's official now, but I also have to say I read that article, and who cares? I mean, who cares?
So I guess that Frank Oz,
yep,
one of the creators of the Muppets, replied and said that Jim and I never created them as gay.
Well.
But I think that one of them, Ernie, is kind of based after the person who gave the interview, Mark. His lover name was Arnie.
Again, I guess my feeling is this. I loved Bert and Ernie. I thought they were great. I thought they were high up there on my list of favorite characters. And they were very sweet together, and all of that is great. But you know what I don't like about our time, actually, is that it feels like we have to put everybody into a box now. If somebody is gay, we have to make sure that everybody knows that they're gay. If somebody is a something, they have to. Their identity is critical, and everyone must know. And as far as I'm concerned, if they want to be friends that live together who are straight, and by the way, I have two straight friends who lived together for, I think, I don't know, 10 years or something, straight as arrows, and they just couldn't stop living with each other. It's weird, sure, but what's wrong with it?
It also happened in Friends with Chandler and...
Yeah, who cares about Friends? Anyway, but my point is only this. It's like, I think it's wonderful that gays can live out proud lives. But does that mean that now we have to ascribe gayness to everybody if it isn't clear? Let it be clear when it's clear.
I want to mention just my favorite quote from that interview with Mark Saltzman. He said that Arnie, his lover, Arnie's OCD would create friction with how chaotic it was. And that's the Bert and Ernie dynamic. And it's so cute, I think, that it really was. I mean, it is Bert and Ernie.
Well, there's no doubt that when you write something that was as lovely as that is, you pattern it after some part of your life.
Yeah. Sure. And he said that this is the only relationship he knew at the time. So.
Right, right.
So obviously, that's that. Okay, so...
Didn't they sleep in separate beds? They slept in separate beds.
But in the same room, no?
Yeah, well, okay, but still.
Yes.
All right, anyway.
Today we're talking about fulfillment, both at work and as dads. We brought a life coach, right? Who is also a dad, Peter Gandolfo. He does executive and individual coaching, but it's also he also has a special retreat for gay men called Creating Your Future, and we talked about that too. And why did we brought on a life coach? Do you know?
Well, first of all, I'll point out you scheduled it, but I do know. But go ahead, tell us why.
The reason why we brought it, I think it's an important topic for parents, because it basically deals with happiness. We deal with happiness. So if you want to give it at one word, I think that would be the word. We all want to be happy at work, in our love relationship, and also, of course, in our immediate family situation. I think it's these are the three pillars of happiness, by the way.
Wait, what are the three pillars?
Work.
Yeah.
Love relationship. Yeah. And immediate family.
God, I never thought about whether those are the three pillars.
Think
work,
about it.
Work, it's love always relationship, and family?
Yeah. Maybe you could add friends. But that's actually, if you have a problem
loved
in your
ones,
life.
As opposed to if you work... Love relationship and loved ones, whether they're family or not.
Yeah, you can say that.
I had to think about that. Hey, there's a question.
Because if
people.
You have a problem...
Are those the... Hold on. Are those the pillars?
Three pillars. We have an email now. hello@daddysqr.com.
And I assume that people are going to write chocolate and, you know, anal penetration and things like
and
that.
And Kylie Minogue.
No, nobody's going to write that except for you.
And while you're doing that, if you write to us, please also rate and review podcast.
Yes. No. Rate and review us. And you know what is great? 5 stars are great. We
yes.
Love
and also
five
a
stars.
Review of how sexy Alex's voice is.
Okay. All right. Why did you do that? Tell everybody how sexy my voice is.
I want to mention on air to mention the opening music of this podcast because the generous Andrew Butler, who wrote this piece from Hercules and Love Affair, it's called Leonora, and he gave us the permission to use it for our podcast.
Can I see that piece of paper where it's written? Where is it?
Right there.
The opening music, Hercules and Love Affair. Okay, hold on. The opening music, Hercules and Love Affair, Leonora. We want to thank Andrew Butler for permission to use the music in our opening. Hercules. I don't know what Hercules is.
Contact us at hello@daddysqr. It's actually daddysqr. S-Q-R. hello@daddysqr.com or on Twitter @YanirDekel because Alex doesn't answer emails.
I don't do Twitter. Until Trump is off, I'm not on.
I think we're ready for the conversation with Peter, unless you have something else to say about happiness and coaching.
Happiness is you.
Oh,
yeah. Okay, let's do it.
So we're here with Peter Gandolfo. I'm saying it with my Israeli accent. I have this imagination that people will feel better or at least more motivated after this interview.
Don't put him on the spot or anything.
Help us.
I would love that to be an outcome of this conversation, and I'll try not to feel too much pressure.
let's start with what is coaching, because a lot of people mix coaching with therapy.
Yeah, I hear that a lot, and it's one question I had to answer for myself even as I was beginning the journey to becoming a coach. And people often will look at it in comparison with therapy or with mentorship. A couple of the major premises that differentiate it is that with therapy, someone is a trained professional, and they are there as the expert, and they're often there to give their assessment of the situation and advice. Whereas with coaching, we are peers. I will never pretend to be the expert, or especially in an individual's life and what would make most sense for them. So I'm there as their equal, and my job is to create the space for them to build the awareness and the answers that are most important to them. I don't know if you've ever had the experience where someone is giving you advice that you didn't ask for. Mm-hmm. Very often it's not lined up with what is the right path for you. But if you have a stimulating conversation that allows you to reflect on things, you can often come to the answers yourself.
Yenir, have you ever experienced someone giving you advice that you felt that you hadn't asked for?
Yes, Alexander,
really?
All the time.
That's very surprising. I wonder under what scenarios that would be.
So one thing that is... before that, first of all, when do people need coaching?
Transitions is one of the places where coaching first emerged. In fact, I trained with a place called the Hudson Institute, and Frederick Hudson is seen as one of the founding fathers of the practice of coaching. And his work was rooted in some studies of adults and transitions and how they navigate transitions. Mm-hmm. Coaching, as it's seen today, can take several different forms. The two that I focus on most are adults in transitions, and those can be transitions that they are choosing to make because they're wanting something to be different than it is today. But sometimes it's also a transition that I'll say happened to them. Let's say a relationship ended and it wasn't their choosing, or they were made redundant at work and they now need to figure out what are the next steps. The other path that you can take with coaching is what people will often call leadership coaching. And this is usually coming from a place of strength, in that you or your organization sees that you have a lot of value to add, but you want to focus on the building skills that will allow you to go even farther so you can be most effective in your role, or you can work towards a goal that you've set out for the future.
Mm-hmm. I'm very interested about the whole coaching when transitioning, especially because we're a podcast for gay dads, and the transition itself from a gay mm-hmm. person to a dad can be very hard, especially because you feel like, or at least in my case, I feel like I'm losing some sort of a freedom, but also I'm getting into something that is perceived as more, you know, heteronormative. I don't want to be in these, you know, frames where I'm considered as the wife, the mother, whatever.
Yeah, I think one thing is that becoming parents, it really challenges us to reflect on what our identity is. And if you've grown up as an adult man, and in many ways, you've defined yourself by other measures, the relationship that you're in, the job that you have, where you live. And now all of a sudden you've put yourself in a new situation, and it's people often assume when you become a parent that you are heterosexual, and you are start crossing these worlds that you've never been a part of. And so I think it causes us to reflect a lot on that. And part of it, often parents want to embrace, and there's other parts of it that there are some mixed emotions about. And mm-hmm. so for me, when I'm working with a client that is addressing those transitions, it's understanding what parts of their past they want to hang on to, what parts are they okay to say goodbye to, or at very least put off to the side for now. And then how do they want to work some of those pieces of their lives back in as the challenges of parenthood become a little bit more manageable?
So from your experience, what would be, or from just examples from clients, what do people do?
Well, I can focus maybe on some examples of what my husband and I have done.
Okay.
I would say that we've tried to balance spending time with our straight friends with and without kids and our gay friends with and without kids. The spending time with our gay friends is important for a couple of reasons. One, we want to make sure that our kids are exposed to other families that look like theirs. Mm-hmm. And while with young kids, it's really about them just having fun together, our hope is that as they get older, they'll have some support and an ability to relate in a way that other kids may not be able to identify with. I think for us, there's ways in which we can connect and relate to two dad families in a way that may not come as naturally in friendships that are a one mom and one dad. You know, it's very common, for instance, that you get together in a social setting and the men will congregate in one area and the women will congregate in another area. Mm-hmm. And when we show up as a two dad family, it's like, okay, where do we go?
Usually with the moms.
One place it's shown up for my husband and I a lot is that most of his friends before we met were men, and they would often get together for guys' nights or some kind of activity that's just the guys. But that is not the natural delineation of when he and I are going to go spend time separately. Mm-hmm. And so it's navigating what does it mean to have a guy's night out, and sometimes that means that I go with them and sometimes they go off and do their own thing. And right. It's taken us a while to figure out what that right balance is.
You know, back to what you were just talking about before, one of the things I've noticed, maybe this is off subject, I apologize, but it seems meaningful to me, is when you have sets of parents that get together, there's a kind of gravity of gays and straights. So if you have a few straight couples, mm-hmm. and a gay couple, no problem. If you have a few gay couples, at least we've noticed, no straight couples. What tends to happen is, and I'm not suggesting any form of homophobia or anything like right. that, it's just that there is a kind of seeming need for majority for comfort, mm-hmm. right, that we don't have, maybe because we grew up being in the minority. But I've just noticed that when we have gatherings of parents, it's either the scenario where there's like one gay couple with a bunch of straight couples.
Right.
Or they're gay. Or it's a gay gathering. Have you noticed that?
I hadn't noticed it until you mentioned it. And now that you say it, I think it absolutely is true. I mean, in our kids' classes, as far as I know, we're the only two dad family. Mm-hmm. And everyone is very inclusive and welcomes us. But when we socialize or we're organizing activities, it's either us organizing an activity for us and other two dad families, or us and other families that are using some other lens. And I think you brought up a really good point that as gay men, we are accustomed to feeling different from everybody else that we're around. So it's not alarming or anything for us to be in a circle of people that are in a different type of relationship. I don't know that people would be opposed to it, a straight couple being in a group that's predominantly two dad families or two mom families, but it's less familiar to them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I want to touch the subject of the life purpose, because I see that a lot of coaches do use that term. So how do you think it became such a major topic, the whole life purpose?
I don't know if it's because my age being in my mid-40s or that it's become more common in the past 10 years, but life purpose is something that shows up a lot. And I feel like I'm a Gen Xer, and so for me and a lot of my peers, I feel like it showed up when we hit the age of 40. And this idea that we are far enough in our lives that we've accomplished a lot of our goals, but we may be reevaluating how satisfying reaching some of those goals are. And we're not anywhere close to death, hopefully, but it's not so far away that we can't imagine what the end of our lives might look like, and wanting to make sure that we're spending our time on the things that matter most to us. Mm-hmm. When I look at it from a more academic viewpoint, one of the things that really comes up for me is this hierarchy of needs that was created by Abraham Maslow, I think in the 1940s. And it talks about the different levels of needs, and that At its most basic, people are looking for physiological needs to be met.
Right.
Once that's established, it's moving on to safety and then social belonging. And when you start to talk about purpose, it's getting into some of the higher order needs around esteem or even more importantly, self-actualization. In many ways, these are questions of privilege, and that if your other needs are being met, then you are hopefully given the opportunity to think about some of these other things, specifically around purpose. And as I think about it as becoming a parent, it's not just about, am I honoring myself, but you're now serving as an example to your children. And for me, at least, it put more pressure on me to stay true to what my values were, to work towards my goals, to stand up for what's right. Mm-hmm. And so becoming a father helped me be more in alignment with my life's purpose.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but we used to call that stuff a midlife crisis. Mm-hmm. You'd go out and you'd buy a Porsche and you'd divorce your wife and you'd marry a much younger woman.
Right.
That was life purpose. It's the same thing. We're just, I mean, hopefully not divorcing the wife and buying the Porsche, but it's the same concept. You get to a certain age and you start to say, wait a minute, you know, what am I doing with my time?
I think that nowadays, I don't know why, but I hear it more, maybe because I'm also in my mid-40s. I mean, at the beginning of the mid-40s.
I had no idea.
I think that's something that I've dealt with throughout my life. So I think it also depends on the personality. You want to be happy. And some people just let life happen to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just go with the flow. And some people are work deliberately and ask themselves, what makes me happy? How can I make my life better?
I'll share another example from my own life, which is I knew from a very early age that I wanted to be a dad. And for a very long time, that seemed like an unachievable goal. Yeah. Once I did become a parent and it achieved this really significant goal in my life, it's not like every day it was roses and fairy tales. There's a lot of parenthood that's really, really hard. And sometimes that realization that this isn't just a fairy tale and there's days when it's challenging can be tough. And for me, I had to work through that didn't mean that this wasn't the right path for me. It was right. The right path. But it wasn't a silver bullet to happiness either. I was still needed to work at being happy, both as a parent, as a spouse, and as an individual.
This just triggers some really interesting questions for me, and answer, you know, within the context of your own life or however you want to do it. See, I don't know that I wanted children.
Okay.
I don't know what that means exactly. Wait, the microphone is moving.
Yes.
Us belong to this generation too, that we didn't think it's going to be possible.
No, I'm sorry. I don't think that's the reason why. What I'm getting at is this. When I was younger, when I was in my 20s, I didn't really think about it much, but if I did think about it, I might have said to myself, yeah, that sounds like it would be cool, but to me that's not wanting. Wanting is something you feel, right? I mean, you want Henry Cavill. We want Henry Cavill, right? We want that chocolate cake, right? But children, like, I know women who they feel about having children like I feel about Henry Cavill. Like, they feel it, right? I never had that feeling. It was much more of an intellectual endeavor to say, like, yeah, I see how this could benefit my life and it could be great to have children as part of my world, etc. Did you have more of that emotional and instinctive pull to have children?
Yes, I felt it very strongly, to the point where if I didn't follow through with this goal, I would have felt like I wasn't being true to myself. I wasn't lining up with what I was brought on this earth to do. But that's not to say that everyone, that's their path. Right. I've talked to a lot of parents where one of the parents was the one that was a little bit cautious or hesitant, and then they're surprised to find how engaged and passionate they are about their role as parents.
Right.
But my first long-term relationship started in my later 20s, and even though I knew I wanted to be a parent, I didn't feel any sense of pressure to talk about it because I wasn't ready to have kids yet.
Right.
And I just assumed everyone felt the way that I did, that eventually this will happen.
Right.
Well, it turns out that my partner at the time, a couple years into it, realized that's not what he wanted. And there was a point in our relationship where each of us as individuals had to decide, are we going to stay in a relationship where we love each other, but our goals are not in alignment? And it took a lot of courage for me to say, this is good, but I need to take some risks and go after something that is more true to what I want to be.
So there's this spectrum of people and their sort of instincts about having children.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really tough, especially for a gay man who probably has to do some crazy stuff to get kids, right? What's the mechanism by which you figure out whether you should do this?
So what I found is most helpful in my work with my clients and from my own experience is this whole idea of experiments. How can you try on a role for size and see how it fits? So that may mean spending time with other friends that have young children. For me, it was volunteering through Big Brothers Big Sisters and spending time on a committed basis with one young man. And there, I'm sure there are other paths that people can explore. But that for me was helpful in confirming it, because while I found the role of being a big brother very fulfilling, it wasn't going to fully satisfy this need that I had.
Some fathers choose to quit work and stay at home. When do you know it's the right decision for you to make, or this is what will make you fulfilled?
Assuming, of course, it's even possible
from
a financial perspective.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the financial piece is a very important part. And if you've covered off some path to making that an option, I think the part that's most helpful is reflecting on what are your goals for the future, and how does making the decision to be a stay-at-home dad or a stay-at-home mom at this stage in your life, how does it support those goals?
Mm-hmm.
So that you may choose to be a stay-at-home parent now, but 3 years from now want to reenter the workforce. I think it's really advantageous to think about what can you do to make sure that that is a possible option as you exit. It's not necessarily easy to become a stay-at-home parent. In a lot of ways, it's a job that's far harder than anything that we could go to work to do. Anybody that's balancing both roles knows that after a stressful weekend with their kids, going into the office and interacting with adults who, for the most part, are quite reasonable is very relaxing.
Yep.
Work is vacation.
Yeah, I get in my car in the morning on a Monday, and I have a mantra, basically. I close the door, and I say, "So long, suckers." That's just every time. I don't know if you know about that. And then I drive away to work.
Me.
It feels really good.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't include you.
So I think it takes a lot of reflection on what are your reasons for wanting to do this? How are you going to be there to support your kids? How are you going to be able to take care of yourself? Maybe self-care becomes a very important question for all parents, but especially for ones that are working solely out of the home.
Right.
Because there will never be an end to the need in any given day. And so when are you going to carve out that time to address your own needs?
One of the formulae that Yanir and I have been thinking about, even from before the kids were born, is this question of not only for ourselves, but for our kids. How important is it that we not be dedicated? So that we are bringing things home to them, mm-hmm. rather than making our world be them, right? So obviously I'm presenting this with a point of view, because
yes.
Otherwise I wouldn't have put it that way. But you know, I was raised by two working parents, and they came home every night, but they didn't come home so early, and they were wonderful, loving parents, but they brought the outside world to me through their own passions and their own experience in the day. And I wonder, you know, how valuable relative to the ability to be there with the child all the time is that? It's a balance, right? It's a trade-off.
Yeah, there's no one path for it. I think for what I realized was for me to be the best parent that I could be, I needed to have some stimulation and interaction with adults outside. And it took some work to get over this notion that, yes, we did need some extra help. We're fortunate enough to have a nanny that our children adore. And that the definition of being an involved parent that I'd grown up with, where my parents were home for dinner every single night. My mom made dinner and had it on the table when my dad got home from work. And one or both of them were bathing us every night is not the model that we're living. And I think if I were trying to live the example my parents set, which was a very positive one, I don't know that I would be that satisfied. And so it was a matter of appreciating what I came from and then at the same time figuring out what works for us. Mm-hmm. The topic of dinner, for example, that was a real sticking point. My husband works in entertainment. He works long hours. It's not practical to ask a two-year-old to wait until 7:30 or 8 o'clock to eat dinner.
Right.
But we figured out another path that works, which is having breakfast together. Mm-hmm. And I think that us going out into the world and coming back and sharing what we're exposed to is a great thing for our kids to experience. My husband and I have been on a fitness journey this year. And I love that when we come home, they'll ask comments about, did you do exercise? Oh, you're sweaty because you were going to the gym.
How old are your kids, by the way? I didn't
four. My older son is 4.5 and our younger one is 3.
Yeah. Okay.
They started now.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, my kids actually asked
they
me
want
whether
to go
I
to
was
the
at the gym or at the moon. Okay. So, you know, whatever.
People who, let's focus on those who work now. What should we feel or do in order to feel fulfillment at work?
I think there's a couple of things, and some of them are quite macro, and some of them get down to the core of what's important to you. I think you have to start with believing in the purpose of the organization. Mm-hmm. And if you don't believe in the product or service that your organization's providing to their customers, it's really hard to stay engaged in the work. The second level is understanding how your work contributes to those goals of the organization. In my opinion, if you believe in your organization but you don't feel like the work that you're doing is essential, it's also hard to stay engaged. Mm-hmm. But then the third, and to me ultimately the most important piece of this, is that to stay engaged at work, you have to have an opportunity to leverage your strengths. And the definition of strengths that I use is one that I learned from Marcus Buckingham. And he's a great thinker on how we can leverage our strengths to do more of what we're passionate about, is this idea that strengths are activities that bring you energy and make you feel strong. You love to do them and you do them well. Mm-hmm. We too often think of strengths as things that we're really good at. But if it's draining, if you feel you don't look forward to it or you're totally spent, it's really just a competency. It's not a strength.
Mm. That's nice. That's true.
So let's say that people don't feel that and they feel that they are frustrated with their work situation, but then they're stuck because they're dads now and they can't quit because they have to provide. What mm-hmm. do we do then?
Well, I see three paths to that. One is you choose to accept it, which may require a shift in attitude about what purpose does this work provide. And in the simplest form, it provides income so that I can support my family. The second is to focus on changing it. Mm-hmm. And the third is to try to learn something new from it. So I'll give you an example. There was a period where I had been in a role for several years. I was really wanting and felt like I had deserve the right to be promoted, but for a variety of reasons, the economy, the state of the business, and the lack of advocates within the organization, it just wasn't happening. So what I chose to do instead was look for a different role within the organization at the same level. so that even if I wasn't growing in terms of responsibilities, I was at least gaining new skills. Mm-hmm. The other piece of this is that when we're frustrated at work, it's very easy for us to fall into the trap that everything is in the power and control of someone else or something else. And what I like to do with my clients is acknowledge, while a lot of that may be true, this is a system and you are one piece of that system. And you can't control how others will respond, but you can change the inputs into the system. Mm-hmm. And so helping them identify what pieces of this are within their control is a really helpful way of changing that level of engagement in our work.
Yeah, I have a question, so I guess I'm
supposed to, how you announce.
I have a question. I don't know how many dads you've worked with, but what do you think the impact on their work is of having children? As a general kind of consideration, mm-hmm. what happens to you in your work, other than exhaustion, which is a given, right? What happens to you in your work when you have kids?
There's a lot of things that happen, and I feel like it's so easy for everyone to think about all the ways in which becoming a father or a parent makes your job harder. I found it really helpful to reflect on the ways in which becoming a father made me more effective as a leader.
Yep.
You've heard this line before, probably. You want to get something done, ask a busy mom. Well, I think that whole notion applies to anyone. Being a parent really forces you to get clear on what are your priorities, how are you going to get them done. There's no time to waste time. And there's a lot of things that we do, even in a busy job, that aren't necessarily value add. So it forces you to make some tough decisions about what isn't going to get done, either because it's not going to get done at all, you're going to do less of it, or you're going to delegate it to somebody else who can do it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Drucker calls it this idea of planned abandonment. What am I going to intentionally stop doing?
Interesting.
I think that the other part of it that comes up for me is this idea of really being resourceful, because you're constantly being faced with situations that have never happened to you before. You're dealing with a person that thinks and acts differently than you do. They're not just a different age, but they have different motives. And in many ways, that's like interacting with someone within your organization that you don't mm-hmm. see eye to eye with. And so I think it helps build a lot of empathy. You're working with someone that you just aren't connecting with. It's tapping into that intrinsic connection you feel to your child, even when you don't agree with them or you're in conflict.
Well, and no doubt if you work for an entertainment company, it's nice to know how to work with children. There's that aspect. No, I'll tell you what, one thing for certain that I experienced was I have a lot of passion about my work. I've always had a lot of passion about my work, and that's generally a good thing, but it also results in being pissed off a lot because things aren't going the way you want them to go, and they're not going fast enough, mm-hmm. et cetera. All of a sudden, you have children, and no matter what you do, some perspective has just been jammed into your life. And so one of the things I noticed was that 3 years ago, I was at very much the height of pissed offedness at work about a whole lot of things. And I still was, I guess, in one part of my mind, but within 3 weeks of my children being born and my returning to the office, I was like, yeah, but I got all this other stuff going on. And the funny thing about it was, I think it actually helped me at work tremendously, because that kind of balance in my attitude, at least in a large company, was appreciated
right.
in ways that I did not expect.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if you think back to that situation and all of the energy you were focused on being pissed off,
yeah.
and what purpose was that serving? Was it getting the work done? Was it leading to better results?
Oh, okay.
Putting that energy into something in your personal life with your children that was going well
yep.
allows you to come back with a fresh perspective.
Yeah.
You know what I love about coaching, and I do have a business coach. So this, and I do have a therapist. So I kind of know the difference between the two. And I think that what I love the most about coaching is the coaching is more about action items, like go there and do that, and things will change.
Absolutely.
Do you agree?
I was a psychology major in undergrad, and for a while considered going in to get a graduate degree in counseling psychology. And the thing that held me back was that I was concerned about getting weighed down by other people's problems. I tend to internalize them. When I discovered coaching, what I really liked about it is, yes, there's some reflection on the past, but it's very much about how do you take the situation you've been in or you are in, and do you move forward in a positive way? Mm-hmm. And it's not just unpacking and processing thoughts, ideas, and feelings, but it's taking action and getting very specific about, okay, what are you going to do about this?
Right. And I think that there's a specific or at least special importance for gay men about coaching.
How so?
We grow up thinking that we're different than the others and we're less worthy, and therefore we don't get to fulfill our dreams and don't get to do what we want to do. So I think that with the help of coaching, we can actually raise our self-esteem and go ahead and get the life that we want.
Hearing you talk about that helps me reflect on some feelings I'd had professionally, which was, even though I'd always felt like I was accepted and included professionally for being who I was as a gay man, there was this intrinsic feeling that I always needed to work harder than anybody else because I didn't feel like I was good enough.
Yeah.
And in coaching, I was able to get to this place of feeling like the things that make me different aren't liabilities. And if I try to stuff them and hide them, they're just gonna come out in unproductive ways. But if I can allow them to come forward and celebrate those parts of myself and really be myself at work, I'm gonna perform better, I'm gonna have better results, I'm gonna feel more engaged in my work. And coaching was a key part of that realization.
Is that what you're doing? You have a retreat for gay men?
Yeah.
Alex, I don't know if you know that.
I don't. But yeah. Here is our opportunity to learn about it together.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what you do.
That's one of the things that I've been working on. It's a retreat called Creating Your Future. And what I noticed in coaching retreats I've been to was that far more than 50% of the participants were women. And I think there's a natural tendency for women to be reflective in experiences like this. But I was left wondering, is part of the reason that more men don't participate is because they don't necessarily know that there's going to be other people that they can connect with or relate to? And so my hypothesis, and I'm developing this with a peer from my coaching program, is that if I could create a community of other gay men of all different ages, of professional backgrounds, but with this common ground of being able to relate to each other as gay men, that it would be a great place for them to explore what their values, their priorities, their goals are, and what actions they want to take to get there. And that could be for someone in their mid-20s that's early in their career, but has a chance to reflect on what they can do now to get in line with their goals. And it could be for someone later in their lives, even preparing for retirement, and how do they want to spend that time so that it's truly fulfilling.
We're coming towards the end, so I want to talk a little bit about your story. When did you come out?
Well, I think I first came out to myself when I was a senior in college. And I consider the end of that coming out journey when I came out to my parents, which was 3 years later.
Mm. And how did you meet your partner?
We met on Match.com.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
It's nice to see that. Cool.
How long ago?
That was 8.5 years ago. So we got in right before the window of Grindr and every other app taking over the whole phenomenon.
What was the most... What was the most sort of interesting aspect or attractive aspect of his profile on Match? Do you remember?
Well, First, I have to say he broke every rule of online dating with his photographs. They were low resolution. He had his sunglasses on in most of them and cropped people out of the pictures. But
it all depends on what he looks like. Maybe that's the best thing he could have done.
Well, what I was really drawn to were his eyes. He had really kind eyes. And then in terms of his profile, it was he felt like a very multifaceted person. He was passionate about his work. He loved to travel. And most importantly, his family was very important to him.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So, and you adopted the kids?
Yes.
Adopted two kids.
We did.
So how did this come about?
So I had known for most of my adult life that I wanted to adopt, in part because my parents are foster parents for newborns.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so the whole idea had been quite normalized to me from a very early age. And I was really happy when I learned that my husband was open to that path as well. And for people that choose surrogacy, I commend them and I think it's fantastic. It didn't feel like that was as important to us. We chose to work with an attorney because we knew we wanted to have infants. Mm-hmm. And we started out with one attorney who'd done a large volume of placements in Los Angeles, and we weren't getting the experience that we'd hoped for. It felt a little bit like a factory. Mm-hmm. And then a gay friend had suggested we connect with an attorney that was more of a boutique service. And he found that a lot of birth mothers were looking for two-dad families. And at the time, the attorney had no two-dad clients.
Oh, wow.
And what I didn't know is that a lot of birth moms love the idea of placing their children with two dads. One, it puts them on the pedestal because they truly can't have children without the help of a woman. Mm-hmm. But also, they're never replaced as the baby's mother.
Oh.
They will always be the mom.
Oh, wow.
And so when we worked with this new attorney, we were surprised to match, and I think it was 4 weeks with our first child.
Wow.
We were on our delayed honeymoon, and we got a phone call while we were out in Hawaii that we matched. And our son was born 10 weeks later.
Wow.
We flew the birth mother out to California, and she delivered here. Mm-hmm. And he's been with us ever since.
Amazing. And so he's 4 now.
Yes.
Does he ask questions already?
Oh my gosh. He asks questions that are super profound and deep and will often send
me. When did it start?
It started when he had just turned 3. We were on a Christmas break and I was putting him to bed and he said, "How did you pick me?"
Oh.
Wow.
I tear up thinking about it. But I said, "We didn't pick you. Your birth mother picked us. And how lucky are we that she picked all of us to be together?"
Yeah. That's such an amazing answer.
Wow.
It's funny because how young they are that they already understand that they did, like, it took a special thing, extra thing to get hair tissues. To get where they are, to get to their family.
And I noticed that with our kids as well, and some of it for me is that they're modeling what they hear in daycare or preschool. When children are distressed, they often will ask for mommy.
Right.
But I also think that to them it's a nurturing, it's a role, not a gender.
Mm-hmm. Right.
How does your personal story affect what you do?
It affects it in a couple of ways. One is that I started this journey to becoming a coach just a couple months after becoming a father. And one reason is that I realized that to be in a traditional corporate job was going to be very challenging for me to be as active as I wanted to be. And so what I really love about being a coach is it allows me to interact with leaders, work with in corporate organizations, but have the flexibility that I need. The second is that my path to fatherhood required that I be really clear on my goals and make active choices to work towards those. And I think that really lends itself to helping my clients mm-hmm. get clear on what is important to them and how they're going to make those steps to get there.
Yeah. Thank you so much. It's been such an amazing and fascinating. I could talk to you for another hour, but we have to go. Yes.
Thank you for the invitation.
Thank you so much. Sure. And we wish you the best and for the kids. And
we're going to have to figure out how to wind these down because it's getting weird at the end of them. It was weird at the end of the last one, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because you're sort of like sitting there in front of the microphones and you're like, so, thanks for coming. But now we're going to take a, if it's okay, we
sure.
take a picture.
Yeah, that's great.
That was Peter.
You know, the part of that interview where he talked about his own story and the questions that his son asked meant a lot to me. I mean, you know.
You know that I sometimes I said, thank you for choosing Abba and Daddy to our sons, even though they're not adopted.
Well, not only are they not adopted, we it's manufactured
very,
them.
It's factory. Very spiritual.
No, it is. And look,
their soul chose us in a way.
Okay.
That's what
you
I
know,
believe.
You do.
I'll do my
Abraham
Hicks.
Yeah. But you know, putting aside the fact that it's every podcast interviewer's dream to make the other person cry, one of the things that I just have been blown away by in the 3 years that we've had the kids is they make me cry a lot. Mm-hmm. They make me cry a lot. And, you know, they inject so much emotion into our lives. And I'm not saying
not from sadness.
Oh, well,
also from happiness.
No, but all of it, right? Yeah. I mean, they've made me cry from sadness many times when I just can't handle the pressure of it, or they're driving me crazy, or I'm exhausted, or whatever. And they've made me cry just so many times from, you know, the kind of tears of joy that I don't know, I wasn't accustomed to experiencing mm-hmm. very often. And it's so powerful to, and it's a shame this is just an audio podcast, because to see him as he was talking about the experience that he's had with his kid, I just, you know, it just pulled on my heart, because I know how that feels. And it was amazing. It was really nice to see.
One of the things that I took away from this interview is that the questions that you have to ask yourself, and I think he talked about work, but I think it's related to any situation, in order to move forward towards happiness. And the first question was, what are your goals for the future? Mm-hmm. And the next question was, how does your situation or your decision supports those goals? I think that, you know, it's really important to ask yourself these questions, the answer, whatever it may be, it's the magic way towards the.
I hear you, and I think that one of the things about being a gay or lesbian parent, or I suppose a single parent, is that you know, so many of the other things that happen in a person's life, they really can sort of bumble through. Mm-hmm. I have bumbled through an awful lot of the decisions that I've made in my life. You know, I've just gone sort of, oh, well, look, this happened, and then fell into my lap and I did it, et cetera. The thing about, you know, being a gay dad is this is a difficult thing to achieve. You literally have to plan it, and there's shit tons of forms to be filled out, and there's generally some money involved unless it's adopting, but even there's mm-hmm. a lot of complexity. And so you have to have really decided that this is what you wanted. Do you necessarily make the right choice? I assume that for some parents, no, they've made the wrong choice, but yeah. you have to decide. And for me anyway, in my life, like, this is that kind of directed path where I had to think about, what am I doing? What am I getting into? And is this really what I want for the goals of my life? And with all of that, I have been utterly shocked by how much of it I didn't think through before the kids came.
Another thing that I wanted to kind of highlight is, because I do this a lot, and he calls it a trap, that the thought that everything is controlled by other people, and I sometimes I feel like I'm, you know, I'm a victim because other people are doing things to me, and you know, I have no power to kind of stand up against that, and you know, So and a lot of books and a lot of, you know, self-help books that I read and psychology books talk about how much control do we actually have that we don't know and we don't realize. Mm-hmm. And I think that the most of the time, lack of control, it's actually lack of knowledge, that you don't really know what to do. So how do you learn? And I think that the one thing I found to learn is through, of course, through therapy or coaching, but also through reading books, you know, even asking other parents on, you know, on the gay fathers groups on Facebook. So this is how you learn. Don't be ashamed to ask your question. Yeah. and figure out what you don't know.
And bringing it back to parenting again, by the way, interesting thing, right? You can go through a lot of your life feeling that everything bad that happens to you is because this other person was bad or wrong. And then you have very, very little kids, and you realize that when they make you miserable, it's really hard to blame them. When they're 1 year old, it's like, look, you're not a criminal mastermind. You didn't like figure out how to screw me. You're one. So that means that you have to start asking yourself, okay, well, all right, so if I'm really miserable right now, how much of that is truly the child's fault, and how much is it about how I've sort of arranged my life so I can handle the screaming and the pooping and the snot?
It's funny because I felt that, I feel it now more than before. Like when they were one, I really thought, you know, and you know that they were doing this to me on purpose. Yeah,
I understand. I often felt the same way. And since there are two of them, it's very possible that they were working it all out and planning it while we were out of the room at one. Yeah.
Share your stories and please write to us. It's really important for us to hear from you and to make this a community podcast and to kind of make this a picture of a generation.
Look, one of the things that I really would like to see us do here is is push harder and cover subjects that might be a little bit uncomfortable even for us. So we're really open to those. Mm-hmm. Send them to us because, you know, this should be not just a kind of a casual discussion of what it's like to be a gay dad and what people work through, although we want to do that too, but some stuff that really causes people pain and difficulty that we can talk through and maybe help a little bit from our own experience and the experience of experts that we can bring in too.
Hello@daddysquare. Square is SQR, daddysqr.com.
Sunny and share.
Hello@daddysquare.com.
Sorry, I'll never use that again.